extravagant records, some of the box sets that I collected over the years. I think the most extravagant one is a set of bootlegs of Frank Zappa that I have, that is a big stack of LPs, I don't know, 10 or 12 of them, of different concerts with a very elaborate artwork, beautiful cartoons drawn on the covers. And it comes with not only t-shirts and badges, but it also comes with a diorama. It's a cartoon of the band playing and the audience kind of going like this. You know, that's a really extravagant thing. But again, I didn't buy it for the extravagance. I actually bought it because I wanted the music, which at the time was available in no other form. And it wasn't that expensive, and it came with all this other crap. You know, I don't seek things out like that. I think things should be bad on Ubu. You know, there's proper places to see things still. And I think, you know, we're talking about the kind of diminishment of meat space, but still local communities and people need to get together. You know, people forget that going to the movies is a social experience. A lot of people say Ubu is killing independent avant-garde filmmaking. That's a very sad way to think of your artistic field, that a little 4-inch screen on a crappy backlit computer, you can ever replicate the experience of a gigantic screen in a room full of warm people with a wonderful sound system and high resolution. I mean, it's a sad way of seeing films, I think. And yet, many people don't have access to the cultural treasures in a place like New York or Barcelona, London. You know, that's privilege. Actually, we're very privileged to live in a place like that, to go out almost any night and see something fantastic culturally. Most people don't live in places like that. Most people live in the, you know, out, you know, in places of the suburbs that have, you know, malls that wouldn't show this type of stuff. So for them, Ubu becomes the only access to this. So what I am saying is very bad quality becomes the lifeline for many people. And I've heard a lot from people from UbuWeb. They say, you know, this, thank God it's there. Even in this degraded form, at least I have it, because I don't know where I could get it otherwise. It's important to have good resolution. It's important to have good proper distribution for these things. I mean, I support that, and Ubu cannot replace that. I want proper distribution to survive. People that are putting out these types of avant-garde things are not making any money. And as a matter of fact, if something goes back into print on Ubu, I take it down immediately. I want them at least to try to sell it. I don't think they, you know, it's a great way to lose your money, but at least let's support them trying to do that. It's like, again, a community ethos. But Ubu is mostly things that are just out of print or orphaned or just absurdly overpriced that you can't get your hands on. And so I support many people in physical space trying to do things with physical things. It's just we don't do that. You know, people will email Ubu and their collectors, and they'll be like, oh my God, I've got this amazing thing that I want to share with you. And so there's an FTP server to which people can upload things. And, you know, of course, I have to approve it. Sometimes they want to be credited. Sometimes they wish to remain anonymous for probably, you know, reasons of pilfering and underground types of reasons. But UbuWeb is not a community, and it's not a community contribution system in the same way as, we have a bulletin board and we're going to discuss this. And, you know, here's my contribution. Here's my artwork. That it doesn't work that way. UbuWeb is not a democracy. It's very top down. It's very autocratic and imperious. And that's why it's so good. One day, a year or so ago, I received an email from a very powerful literary agency. And it was a DMCA takedown in legal ease, which I get often. And they're kind of scary when you first get them, but then you understand it's a boilerplate. It always begins like this or ends like this. By risk of perjury, I state the following to be true. Okay? And then they list the violations. In this case, it was the list of every instance on UbuWeb that they put into the UbuWeb search engine of the name William S. Burroughs. So there were files that led to The Voice of William S. Burroughs, or the films to William S. Burroughs, but there were also files that led to academic papers that cited the name William S. Burroughs. They say, take it down, every instance, and it went on for pages and pages and pages and pages of this. I wrote the agency back immediately, because I always write back, and I said, first of all, you have perjured yourself terribly, because what you're saying here is untrue. and you've just put the name William S. Burroughs into a search engine, and you've claimed it to be true. And quite frankly, right now, I could sue you for every instance, many times over, if I chose to, because you've actually, by court of law, proven yourself to be lazy and you've lied. But I see what you're trying to do, and you're not going about it in a way that's really going to get you very far. Because what they don't really understand is that William S. Burroughs didn't own the copyright to any of his recordings. They're all owned by Giorno Poetry Systems. The estate of Anthony Balk owns the films. I mean, actually, most everything that they're claiming, they don't understand that they actually don't own it. So she suddenly became very nice to me, you know, when she realized that. And she's probably some intern. She said, oh, you know, I was just acting on bequest of the estate of William S. Burroughs. And I wrote them a letter back. I said, look, please send this to the executor of William S. Burroughs' estate, James Gerholtz. I said, and I quoted William S. Burroughs' chapter and verse. I said, William S. Burroughs said that poetry wants to be free. You know, he made these beautiful utopian statements about poetry. I said, I know where your money is, and I'm not getting involved in distributing copies of Naked Lunch. I know where you make your money. And quite frankly, not only do you not own this stuff, but you really don't make your money on this. And you know what? A little bit of going back and forth made it okay. And, you know, as a result, they went away. Unless the standards of the internet themselves change, there'll always be places like UbuWeb. There'll always be places where you can get underground goods. Mainstream culture continues to go more mainstream, but that's due to kind of marketing and advertising and commercial forces, which we're kind of free of. But the thing that really always kind of amazes me is that the standards of the internet remain open. It still amazes me that in a browser you can still view the source code. Or in a browser you can they still make it possible for you to actually grab and copy text from it, which is why I hated the move toward Flash. You know, say you wanted to go to a restaurant and you needed to copy the address of the restaurant and you try to do it on a Flash interface. You can't do it. You can't copy it and put it somewhere else. You can't move it. But basically, that kind of was rejected by people. Flash interfaces died, probably for that precise reason. So I think there's kind of an ethos, and this may be my weird utopianism, which I could be singing a very different song, you know, a few years from now. But my weird utopianism says that at least part of the web is built on open standards, and part of the web at least will remain that way. But it may not be a part that anybody uses. I mean, things like UberWeb could become like Usenet, you know, IRC. You know, bulletin boards, these kind of things.